Hello, friends. This is the Environment Show, and welcome.
The Earth is my home.
I promise to keep it healthy and beautiful. I will love the land, the air, the water, and all living creatures. I will be a defender of my planet. United with friends, I will save the Earth.
We've reached the point now where other countries, governments of other countries, are sufficiently concerned that they're holding special meetings outside the formal system to talk about what to do about the United States. As an American, it's becoming embarrassing. And unfortunately, I think George Will was probably right when he said, we've not elected a leader, we've got a lapdog for president.
The Pledge of Kids for Saving Earth, founded in Minnesota, now organizing all over the country. And Lester Brown, director of World Watch Institute, he says we will make it, this saving the Earth, but not without direct and deliberate political involvement by both our leaders and our citizens. Those stories and more, this time on The Environment Show. The Environment Show is a production of WAMC and is made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York. And this is Bruce Robertson. Well, did you ever wonder why Earth Day is April 22nd? Why April and why the 22nd? Do you remember how it started? And where? And why? The answers to these and probably a lot more as we talk this time with former Wisconsin Senator and Governor Gaylord Nelson. This year we are celebrating 20 years since the first Earth Day, 20 years of thinking and 20 years of new ideas about our environment. But did you know that that activity surrounding the very first Earth Day in 1970 began actually some 10 years even before that? It was in the early 60s that Governor Gaylord Nelson began to realize that pollution, land preservation, and a long litany of environmental problems needed a national forum.
So when I was governor, I made a special trip to Washington to talk with Bobby Kennedy, who was Attorney General. And I got the idea that if we could get the president to do a nationwide conservation tour, that would give the issue high visibility and attention, and people would start, politicians and the press and the media, start paying attention to it. And then when I got elected to the Senate, I went to see Bobby in 1963. I went to see him again. And he finally was convinced the president ought to do a nationwide conservation tour, and the president did. And he jotted me a note and invited me to join him as to start the tour, because he was going to stop in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and then he asked for some ideas for speeches, and I sent him a 5.5-page document on issues, and Senator Hubert Humphrey and Senator McCarthy, Senator Joe Clark of Pennsylvania, and I left the White House grounds in a helicopter with the president to start his tour, and we stopped in Pennsylvania. And then we went to Duluth and flew across the bay over to Ashland, Wisconsin, and the president gave a speech there. And he gave two more, and then he ended up in Salt Lake City. And he said something there about foreign policy that grabbed the headlines all over the country. And that was the end of the conservation tour. He had people around him who didn't think much of it, didn't believe in it, didn't think it was important. And so that ended the tour, and it didn't achieve what I had hoped it would. And for the next six, 7 years, as I spoke around the country on this issue, I kept trying to think of some way that we could get this issue into the national political arena.
Well, somewhere along in there, Senator Nelson says, he happened to read a magazine article in July of 1969 on student protests against the war in Southeast Asia. The article made a reference to student anti-war teach-ins. That word was the catalyst for what you are likely to be doing on Earth Day this year. Senator Nelson said to himself, why not have an environmental teach-in? Why not? Nelson began a nationwide letter-writing campaign to all of the nation's governors and mayors, asking them for support in organizing some sort of teach-in. Nelson says his original announcement was carried in most newspapers and magazines, but only in a very small column. But when he arrived back in Washington from a nationwide tour, he found that things had begun to change rather dramatically.
The phone was ringing off the hook. People wanted to know what it's all about, how could they participate, and so forth. And I hadn't selected the day yet. I wanted it to be on campus. I wanted the campuses to be not on vacation, not in exams, so I finally ended up talking to the various college associations and It turned out that the week of April 22nd, was the best day, and so I announced it, and immediately within a week was attacked by the John Birch Society as an ill-disguised attempt to honor Lenin's 100th anniversary of Lenin's birthday. So anyway, in any event, it just grew like topsy.
Nelson says some of the seed money came from the United Auto Workers Union and the AFL-CIO. He says he was absolutely amazed at the speed with which this project took off. He had announced the plan in September, and by Christmas it was nearly bigger than he could manage.
Within 2 or 3 weeks of Christmas, my office was so over. It had grown so fast, just from the grassroots, organized itself, grew so fast that I couldn't run it out of my office anymore. I was getting called off the Senate floor, long-distance telephone calls all the time, and I needed to have a clearinghouse and office. And John Gardner, who was just created Common Cause, was at a dinner at somebody's friend's home, and I mentioned I had to get an office going. So he said, well, I'll give you some space. I've got extra space in my offices right now until you find something. So I opened up an office around Christmas time, or a little before Christmas, week or two. And it just kept growing and ballooned in. I thought it would be big, and my purpose was to get a big demonstration to make the politicians pay attention to the issue, and secondarily for an educational event. And it became far larger than I had anticipated. Ended up, according to Walter Cronkite's estimates, the next day of 20 million participants. And there were 10,000 grade schools and high schools and 2,000 colleges and 1,000 communities. So it turned out to be a tremendously successful event, and it did get the issue into the political arena where I wanted it to be so that we could start addressing the issues involved.
Nelson says that he had no idea that he would be speaking about these same issues 20 years later. Former Wisconsin Senator Gaylord Nelson visited the campus of Skidmore College in Saratoga Springs, New York, in a building they call the Carriage House, with beautiful rock gardens and terraces with stone statues stretching out back. Nelson and I sat one afternoon.
It's been a tremendous success, no question, but nevertheless, the fact remains that many of the problems that existed then have gotten worse, and some problems that we didn't even know about have come up. An increased awareness of things like acid rain, our solid waste problems. What do you make of all that in light of 20 years of Earth Daying?
Well, there isn't any question. There are all kinds of specific examples of improvements that have occurred. That is, a river that's better, or Lake Erie is much better, or that sort of thing. The overall assessment one would have to make is that, as a general proposition, the environment is worse off today than it was in 1970. However, we need quickly to add that it would have been a whale of a lot worse off if we hadn't done what we have done. What that tells us is that we're doing too little. We're doing too little and too late. And we need to stop pollution before it starts, not try to clean it up after it's happened, because it costs 10 times, 100 times, 1,000 times as much. So we've learned a lot, and we've come a long way in the sense that the public is much more concerned, much more understanding, much more affirmative in their desires to do something about it. We have also learned, and it was a very important leap forward, we've also now understand that activities of mankind on the planet are, in fact, disastrously degrading the ecosystem that sustains us.
Earth Day celebrations are as much a noting of progress made and lessons learned as it is an opportunity to plan the future, to see where we have come and where we need to go.
What we've been doing in all industrial countries have been spending their capital and counting it on the profit side of the ledger. Every corporation that ever did that went bankrupt. We're headed for bankruptcy. It's only going to take a bit longer, because what we're doing is dissipating our capital assets.
You mean as a nation?
As a nation. What's our wealth? Our wealth is our land, our forests, our lakes, our oceans, our rivers, the air, the minerals, the scenic beauty, wildlife habitats. This is the wealth of the country, and what we're doing is dissipating it. We're polluting the air instead of stopping the pollution. We're polluting the water instead of oceans and rivers. So,
I give a simplistic question, but why are we doing that if it's depleting, if we see it so clearly that that's what the effect is? Why are we doing it?
Well, we spent 200 years operating under the illusion that our resources were endless. It looked endless from coast to coast. That our rivers were big and our oceans were big and the air sky was big and we had tremendous forests and we could throw anything into the air and into the world and nature would take care of it. We now know that is certainly not so. So in the future we have to now work to design a environmentally sustainable economy.
By this, Nelson means, along with the author of this idea, Lester Brown of World Watch Institute, that we need to, in a sense, balance our checkbook, spend no more than we are making, use no more natural resources than we can return or protect. Otherwise, it is simple as this. We will go bankrupt as a civilization, as a race of people, as a species of animal. We will die. That's all there is to it. Senator Gaylord Nelson, on a speaking tour this year to observe Earth Day activities all around the nation, celebrations that he started more than 20 years ago, offers us some final thoughts, thoughts to take with us as we go out to do what we can.
But I think the most important challenge, the most important issue, the environmental issue, is not, important as it is not the threat of global warming or exponential population growth or pollution of the oceans or soil erosion or deforestation. All of those are tremendously important. I'd put exponential population growth the second most important environmental issue facing the country and the world. Because the carrying capacity of the world is overloaded already in many places with too much population. But the most important issue is the lack of a conservation ethic in our culture.
Senator Nelson says this must begin at the earliest possible level, in school, and at the earliest grades. It is with the children that the hope for the future lies, the same children that will be inheriting the Earth. This is The Environment Show, and I'm Bruce Robertson. This is the story of Clinton Hill, a sixth grader at Sunny Hollow Elementary School in New Hope, Minnesota.
The Earth is my home.
I promise to keep it healthy and beautiful. I will love the land, the air, the water, and all living creatures. I will be a defender of my planet. United with friends, I will save the Earth.
I will be a defender of my planet. Unified with friends, I will save the Earth. These are Clinton Hill's friends from Sunny Hollow Elementary School, reciting the pledge of a club at the school, Kids for Saving Earth, founded last fall by Clinton. The children of the club, KSC as they call it, pledge not only to carry out their own mission, but they recite the pledge so that they may continue the work started by their classmate. Clinton died last November of a cancerous brain tumor. In just a few short years, Clinton was able to do and affect more people than most of us can in a lifetime. Perhaps in some way, he felt an urgency to speak and act. Clinton was born in June of 1978 to William and Tessa Hill. Tessa says that right from the beginning, Clinton showed a particular interest in science.
He watched a lot of the public TV programs and the Discovery Channel, a lot of the science programs, and he learned a lot from watching these things and became very aware of the problems that our world is facing. And he just wanted to do something, and he felt kids could do it. He wanted to act right away. He didn't want to wait. And when he decided to start this club, he talked to the other kids about it and spoke to us about it. And then one night when he was, sick, actually, he made a poster, and we had guests over and came downstairs and showed it to us and started collecting money from the people at our home. And he was trying to collect enough money to buy a button-making machine from his Cub Scout magazine. And that was kind of the start of it, officially. And at that point, he had already had two brain surgeries and had 6 weeks of radiation and was under a very severe adult chemo. And so he was really doing amazingly well, but he just was not strong enough to do much in the way of extracurricular activities. So I promised him that when he got well, that that's what we would do. We would go ahead and, you know, work really hard on getting the club going.
Did it strike you at the time that what he was interested in and how he was expressing his interest was something a little bit unusual?
I guess not, because he'd been talking about these things for so long. He was just really interested. He was concerned about all sorts of problems, problems of poverty and minority problems, and he just had been that way for so long.
How did he express his concerns? What sort of imagery did he use if he was watching a television program or reading an article or something? How did he express some of those things that were going on inside him?
Well, he was very verbal. He would just talk to adults in particular. He would just mention them and worry about them, and worry particularly the endangered species he'd talk about quite a bit. He was he loved dolphins, and he was very, very concerned about the dolphin problems. And I think one of the times that I was most affected was when I looked at him and he had been watching a Discovery Channel program about the yellow-eyed penguins, that they were disappearing, and he was crying, and I really knew, you know, then that he was particularly sensitive to all those things.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit more about the club. What is going on with that now?
Well, it's been very exciting. Initially, when we formed, we talked about the sorts of things that we wanted to do and what our concerns were. And, you know, some the kids were particularly concerned about the endangered species and the rainforest. And so what we've done now is this is just the original club, which was about 60 kids out of Clinton's sixth grade level at Sunny Hollow. And we've divided into committees, water, land, and air. And there's another committee that deals with getting film strips and videos and that sort of thing. We've written letters. We've made posters that initially we start out putting them in the school, and then we'll be taking them out into the businesses, spreading the word. And we wrote a letter initially to Oprah, hoping we could get on a talk show because we want to spread the word. And we started a recycle program in the school where the kids painted buckets to collect cans and bottles and newspapers, and that's going full force. And what's happened is that the parents will come back and say to us, you know, we weren't recycling before, but now we can't, we just have to do it, and we're really pleased that we're doing it.
One thing that Tessa did not mention is going on right now to spread the word about KSE.
Initially, what we're doing, of course, is creating awareness of Kids for Saving Earth and, in a sense, spreading the word by including in... We promote our business by having a circular in Sunday papers around the country, and in the circular that we'll distribute on April 22nd, we will have a little special section talking about Kids for Saving Earth in Clinton Hill and why it's important for all of us to listen to that message and try to respond to it.
George Height is Vice President of Consumer Affairs for Minneapolis-based Target Stores, with branches all over the country. He says it's his job to oversee the store's environmental efforts and to provide information to consumers about what the company is doing. One day in January, he says, Tessa, doing some shopping, saw some information about what Target does and asked maybe could somebody come to speak to Sunny Hollow. Again, George Height.
I did not know when she called about Kids for Saving Earth or about Clinton Hill, for that matter. I spent 15 years on the school board. I guess I'm a soft touch for requests like that. And so went out there and was at that point learned about the club and its origins and Clinton's death and Hill's desire to carry on Clinton's interest. I had a chance to talk to the kids and listen to them, and left with a very strong feeling that these kids were doing something worthwhile, and if possible, we should try to help them.
Were you at all surprised by the level of their interest and the level of their activity?
I was. My own children are now gone off to work in college, and perhaps I'd lost sight of how committed elementary-age children can be and how knowledgeable they can be about, especially about things that they have a strong interest in. I'm very impressed with where these children are, and I think really one of the reasons that Target has chosen to work with children of elementary, secondary school age is that they certainly are the reason for us to all be more environmentally conscious than we are. These children, in a sense, will inherit this earth from us. So they are both the reason, but they're also, I think, the solution. Children have a wonderfully simple view. I mean, there is no problem that a child does not believe cannot be solved. They're very committed to solutions. They take simple approaches. They think about what they can do and how what they can do combined with what their friend can do and together will make a difference. And that kind of straightforward, simple approach is a wonderful quality that children have, and I think it can, if we could just expand that into the thinking of most adults, perhaps we'd all be better off.
Not long ago at Sunny Hollow, parents, teachers, and administrators gathered at the school to rededicate KSC and Clinton's special vision. After speeches by Height and Tessa and several local legislators, members of Clinton's class and club spoke in a final tribute to their friend. And it is with those words that we leave this story, hoping that you will watch your local papers for more information about Kids for Saving Earth.
I'm in Kids for Saving Earth because Clinton was a good friend of mine, and I also care about saving the environment.
I'm a member of KSC because I'm concerned about the Earth. Too many animals are becoming endangered species. Our resources are being rapidly depleted. Working together, we can make a difference.
I joined KSC because I was interested in saving the environment, and I think the world would be a better place to live if more people recycle more paper so less trees would be cut down.
I'm concerned about the environment and the rainforest, and together we can save the Earth.
Thank you.
The notion of a sustainable society is the thesis developed by Lester Brown. Brown is director of the Washington-based research group called WorldWatch. Many of you are familiar with the magazine published by the Institute, also called WorldWatch, also with the other famous publication, The State of the World, compiled each year on the state of the Earth's overall environmental health. WorldWatch utilizes a team of writers and researchers who spend the year reading and writing for the annual publication that is issued each winter. Brown says this year, the year of Earth Day 1990, is a critical year. We can and must achieve a sustainable society, and we only have a short while to accomplish that. The key, he says, is in the level of political involvement we each must take.
As you know, we each year in our State of the World report, in effect, give the Earth an annual physical examination. And what we find is that the Earth's physical condition is deteriorating. Each year, the forests are getting smaller, the deserts are getting larger, the topsoil layer on much of the Earth is eroding, the ozone layer in the stratosphere that protects us from harmful ultraviolet radiation is being depleted, the number of plant and animal species on Earth is diminishing, the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere is rising, the amount of air pollution in the world is increasing. Acid rain destruction of forests is becoming highly visible on every continent now. The risk is that these trends will continue and that eventually environmental degradation will lead to economic decline, and then the two will begin to feed on each other. We don't have a lot of time to bring about the changes. If we had a lot of time, we could let the formal educational system take care of it. We could train a generation of teachers who would train a generation of students who a generation later would become the decision makers. But we don't have generations. We don't even have decades. We've got to bring about some important changes, reverse some major trends of environmental degradation in a matter of years. That's where the communications media, that's where your program comes into play. What we have to do is to try and raise the level of public awareness of the threats to our environment and to our future to the point where it will support an effective policy response.
You say we need to raise awareness, but also raise the level of action. Given the low voter turnout in national election, for example, do you think it's really going to be possible and likely that people are going to take political action if that's what's necessary?
The answer is yes. I think we may be on the edge of one of the most revolutionary social periods in human history. We look at the political transformation in Eastern Europe over the last year, and we look at it in awe. No one thought it could happen. And there's a tendency to look at that as an isolated happening, as an Eastern European phenomenon. And indeed it is. But my sense is that it is part of a growing level of awareness throughout the world that the status quo is not working very well anymore, whether it's in terms of the political system and the economic system associated with it, or whether it's what's happening to the environment. I mean, we read the daily newspapers which say the economy is doing well. But how can an economy be doing well when it's sowing the seeds of its own demise?
Which is what Brown sees as happening here in the United States. Lester Brown spoke to us on the Environment Show from Western New England College in Springfield, Massachusetts, there on a speaking tour. He adds that the foremost environmental problem that we face in the world is overpopulation. But here in the United States, we've got another problem. George Bush, the environmental president, Brown does not see enough action.
We've reached the point now where other countries, governments of other countries, are sufficiently concerned that they're holding special meetings outside the formal system to talk about what to do about the United States. As an American, it's becoming embarrassing. And unfortunately, I think George Will was probably right when he said, we've not elected a leader. We've got a lapdog for president.
Lester Brown, Chief Director and Administrator and Researcher at World Watch Institute in Washington, D.C. Well, that's our show for this week. Happy Earth Day week to all of you. Next week, we'll have a sampling of some Earth Day activities that were offered around the country and more of our conversation with Lester Brown. The Environment Show is a production of WAMC. Dr. Alan Chartok is Executive Producer, and this is Bruce Robertson. The Environment Show is made possible by the J.M. Kaplan Fund of New York.